I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We rely too much on industrial agriculture to the point where it's damaging our health, our economy, and the environment itself. Sure, food is cheap and easy to come by in this part of the world, but the costs inherent are almost incalculable. A new book, The Urban Food Revolution, Changing the Way We Feed Cities, is part recipe for solutions to our problems and highlights places where great advancements are taking place, examples of where we could be with new ways of growing and delivering our food. It's a fascinating, stimulating, and important book. Peter Ladner is a journalist and a former two-term member of Vancouver City Council. He's the publisher and co-founder of Business in Vancouver and a director of the Natural Step Canada. The book is published by New Society Publishers. The website for more is at peterladner.ca. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Peter Ladner. Good morning, Mr. Ladner.
Hi, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So people in this town remember you from the last election. Some might from Business in Vancouver. Your name comes up now, I guess, in terms of how many votes Robertson beat you by in the last election. This book, Urban Food Revolution, the ideas in it, these are things that you've been thinking about for a long time, right?
Well, I've been growing my own food for my own personal use forever, as long as I can remember. And when I was on Vancouver City Council, I was on the Food Policy Council, and we pushed for just a quick win among all the bigger things that the Food Policy Council was doing to get 2010 more food producing community garden plots in place by 2010, which actually happened. And so, yeah, I have been watching it closely, and then when I left politics, I was really taken by the importance of this movement, really, and also the enthusiasm with which people were doing things and all the benefits that come out of it. And I decided to go and find out what was happening and provide some guidance for anybody who wants to do it just individually or with your neighbors or with a community organization or the city or province or statewide level.
How much food do you grow at home? Like, can you grow everything that you want? Probably not, right?
No, I mean, I grow quite a variety of stuff, and depending on the season, this year I had very few plums, lots of strawberries, lots of raspberries, and so on. But I think that it's a mistake for people to think that local food means, okay, we're all going to go on a 100-mile diet and give up tea, coffee, and citrus and everything. Mm-hmm. It's much more that you can supplement your diet, you can take more control over what you eat by growing it yourself, but you can also buy it from local farmers and people who, if they could just get a stronger supply in the local market, would cater to that market and bring back some of the strength and vitality and sustainable foods that we used to have before we opted to depend almost entirely on imported industrial food.
Looking at the city of Vancouver and its environs, can we see food production anywhere in the city? Like, do you think that we can do what you're doing or what you've seen in the places that you've been to in this book?
You mean in the future, or is it here already now?
Yeah, like what's here and what can we do in the future?
You can see a lot now. You can go down to Hastings and Hawks and go and see the Soul Garden. It's a commercial, not self-supporting yet, but there are people working full-time on an urban farm there on what used to be a parking lot. You can go all over the city and see yards and former front lawns that have been converted by our now 25 different urban farmer entrepreneurs who are following precepts of people like Wally Sasquatch, who did the spin farming method, where you can get $50,000 worth of produce off a half an acre. Mm-hmm. And you can also see community gardens. You can see developers who are taking advantage of a tax break by putting community gardens in places like Broad and Davie, and you can see rooftop gardens popping up. You can see people growing on their roofs and balconies. There's a lot of stuff going on.
And in terms of sort of these land use policies that council oversees, you've been there. You've been at Cambion 12. Are the changes to bylaws and sort of these policies, are they difficult to come about?
They take a little work. I mean, I know this council has done some work on making it easier for farmers' markets to locate, and they've got permanent signs. They don't need all the temporary permits they used to have. But everything takes work, and getting an inventory of all the available lands in the city is another job that needs to be done. But increasingly, the templates for these changes are available everywhere else. I mean, we just brought in an urban chicken policy, but there's something like 200 cities across North America that allow chickens and have the rules all written out. And so everybody has to invent their own version for the situation. But there doesn't have to be a lot of cost, and really what you're doing is enabling people to do what they really want to do.
How many people have chickens in their backyards in this town?
I really don't know. I don't think it's a significant, really big number. There are some.
Yeah. And do you think that there is a political will to do this? I mean, we're in the midst, or I guess at the end of an election campaign now. Whatever the council will look like, the major candidates, the major parties, do you think they're getting the ideas that are in your book?
Some of them are, some of them aren't.
Yeah.
I think that there's been some overly exuberant spending by the current council on some urban ag things that's been pounced on by the NPA, but I think overall it's pretty hard to argue with the benefits from more urban farming, urban agriculture, more people growing their own food. I mean, there's health benefits, there's community building benefits, your neighborhoods are safer, they're more integrated, you've got seniors out there getting exercise, and people, kids in the schoolyard learning about where their food comes from, and what's not to like.
So what is the problem then? Why aren't people getting the message, do you think?
Well, the people that aren't getting the message, I think, are distracted by the idea that this is going to somehow be sort of, we're going back, we got away from, and that's true. It is going back to something we got away from, but it's something we got to go back to being healthy again. We got away from it too. We got to go back to eating decent food, and we got away from that. So there's places where we've wandered into a dead end, and we've got to back up, start again and get back on track. And I think also people are concerned legitimately about a big mess in the neighborhood, or rats from compost or chickens, or noise and bother. Because on the urban-rural boundary, there have always been conflicts, but more with to do with dust and manure and tractors and late-night harvesting and guns that go off to scare birds away, that kind of thing. But you don't really get that. In fact, studies I found in my book have shown that if you have a community garden in your neighbor, property values go up, actually, rather than down, as some might fear.
And what about the argument that it costs a great deal to tear up a lawn or something like that, or to get started? I mean, are those arguments valid?
It doesn't cost very much to get a plot in a community garden, and one of the things we did when I was in council is we allowed the gardens to get free water from the city so they wouldn't be metered and charged. And it doesn't cost much to get a little flower pot and throw in a seed and get some tomatoes going. One of the people who has really pioneered urban farming in Vancouver is Ward Toulon. He calls himself City Farm Boy. He used to be in the lawn management business, and he tells me that the average household spends $340 a year on their lawn, which you think about the lawnmowers and lawnmower maintenance and fertilizer and aeration and weeding and mowing time and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can to convert that cost into getting food out of it, the average allotment plot in the UK last year grew $2,500 worth of produce if you had to go out and buy it on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So there are economic benefits to this rather than cost.
There's also an argument that using, putting up a community garden on a city block, using that plot to grow stuff, you can't build housing on it or something like that. The population then becomes spread out. That's not a valid argument, is it?
Well, that's if you're thinking we're gonna make farms in the city. What is happening mostly in cities is people taking unused property that's not suitable for housing and not used for housing, or rooftops, for example, and growing food on them. So in Seattle now, you can go above the bylaw height limit if you you're growing food on top of a roof, if you want to put a hoop house or greenhouse on it, you can go higher than you're normally allowed. And these are things that are happening that just show that you can, in fact, grow food in small spaces, and actually there's some money involved. There's some poverty reduction and chance for people to lower their food bills, and you don't have to be creating farms. Although there are cities in the U.S., particularly in the West Belt, the Clevelands and the Rochesters and Detroits and so on, that have huge amounts of wasted empty space that's degrading the city. It costs money to the city and to look after it. They don't get any tax revenue from it. And converting those into farmlands is something that's happening at a very astounding pace.
Now, you take us in the book to a number of places where aspects of this revolution are taking place, or taking hold. Is there a place that's ideal for you, a city that we could learn from, perhaps?
There's no perfect model. There are exciting models and initiatives in lots of different places. Chicago is doing a lot of things. Some cities, you have to take into account, in every city, you have to take into account the local situation. Like Vancouver is very space constrained, whereas a place, as I mentioned, like Detroit's got, they're said to have 40 square miles of vacant, unused property, you know, open property that's just sitting there. That's the entire size of Vancouver. And so their solutions will be different from what we want. And, but there are a lot of common elements of people, cities allowing rooftop gardens and cities making farmers markets easier to set up and cities allowing people to grow for commercial purposes in their yards, which is happening now. Victoria, for example, has done that for 3 years. You can grow stuff in your yard and sell it. You don't need a business license or a special permit.
What about the risk of, say, disease or illness, the concerns about E. coli and the sort? I guess there's no regulation, so no licensing.
Well, if you have a food cart or the farmers markets, they do some testing, and there are some restrictions there. But if you grow some food in your yard, and you say you sell it to somebody, they're going to know exactly where it came from. If they have any problems, they can either ask you or check it out. And if they don't like it, they don't have to eat it.
Yeah.
But the food that you get in the store comes from some big factory somewhere or some big farm somewhere where who knows when it was last inspected, what kind of pesticides were used on it, what went on in all the different places it's been handled. So you're taking a risk whenever you put something in your mouth, but if it's from a local source, you can either know that you grew it yourself or find the person who grew it if you need to or want to and check it out for yourself and be assured that it is safe.
Should there be regulation, though?
Well, regulation for what?
So, for food safety, that we have inspectors and the sort.
I just think that's impractical. If somebody had to inspect everything everybody ate, they would get up in the morning. There'd be so many inspectors you wouldn't be able to move. And so you've got to be practical about it and just say, what are the real dangers? And yes, there are inspectors and safety measures for meat that gets slaughtered. And in fact, those regulations went so far to the top, we pretty much killed our local abattoirs and places where we could process and harvest local meat. But that's coming back a little bit because they realized it's excessive regulation. And really, if you think about the real dangers, the places where E. coli breaks out in a maple leaf farms or meat factory or something,
yeah,
are much more dangerous than your average backyard.
I had Dixon Despommier on, I guess, a year ago when his book on vertical farms came out. You mentioned him in the book. Is that something that Vancouver could look into in the future, and do you think we can?
We're doing it already.
Yeah.
There's a warehouse in Surrey that's producing spinach on an automated greenhouse. Not a big high-rise like Dixon Despommier's talked about. They've just converted a warehouse. It's all indoors. They've used actually technology and expertise and, dare I say, people who had some experience in the underground pot economy here. And you can go buy those spinaches in Whole Foods under the Eco Spirit label. There's another company that based here that's growing, that's got small-scale automated growing systems that they're selling all over the world, a company called Valsynd.
And when I had him on a year ago, he was talking about these tall buildings that are made out of glass that grow everything on every floor. That's not happening anywhere in the world, is it?
His model has been, it's got so many great elements to it, but I think it's so big that it makes it difficult. And as with so many things, when you start small, just build them up gradually, you learn a lot more, and you maybe don't make mistakes you would if you just dove in with a great big project. So there are people, there's an outfit in Montreal now called Lufa Farms. They've got a 100,000 square foot farm on the top of a building. And it's just one floor. And I think that's a much more reasonable way to go at this, and the smaller scale indoor growing things that was mentioned, and just getting better greenhouses and hoop houses, and looking at ways you can automate watering and fertilizing, and using aquaponics where you're growing fish in a tank and the waste gets pumped up above to where you're growing, say, watercress, and they clean the water, it comes back in. That too is being tested around here, and indoor is growing fish in a tank. And these are much more practical and doable ways of growing food in indoors and in contained systems than a big high rise, in my opinion.
Yeah, and what about the issue of sort of subsistent urban farming, urban agriculture, and the sort, so that we can feed, say, the hungry and the homeless? Can food production in the city, can that help that problem?
Definitely. I mean, a lot of that food comes through the Vancouver Food Bank, and they know that they've got to get off industrial leftovers and start looking at fresher food. And so they've started to move upstream in the food system and source more fresh local food. And you can, if you look around, I was just last week in Oakland. I met a guy from Tucson, runs the food bank there. They own and run two farms where they grow food, and I don't know whether they employ people from the city to go out there, but they are growing their own food so they can get fresh food into the hands of people. And the other thing about gardens or farms and growing and community gardens in places like the downtown east side is when people go in there, they actually start to look after themselves, and they're not just waiting for handouts. They can grow their own food and create jobs serving their neighbors, and that's a great step forward compared to just lining up for a handout.
And you're generally hopeful? I mean, do you think that this will obviously save our lives. Do you think people will get the message? Or are you happy with the people that are reading the book, say?
You know, part of me would like people to get the message from reading the book, but another part of me says I'm just scrambling to keep up and let people know what's happening. It's nothing I have to do to make people do this. People are doing this for so many different reasons. They're spooked out by the collapsing systems around them, and they want to take control over their own lives and start with the most basic thing in their life and grow their own food. They're concerned about their kids' health, so they want to get their kids eating healthier. For so many reasons, many, many people at organizations, right through to Walmart and the big corporations, are onto this and doing it with a vengeance, because we really have no choice. We're going to have to diversify our food systems. And we got to get healthier. We got to get people getting some exercise, and we can strengthen our cities in so many ways by doing this that politicians and organizations everywhere are onto this.
The 100-mile diet. I was just thinking that came from here, did it, James and Alyssa? Right.
The 100-mile diet is a Vancouver invention.
Yeah, and there are restaurants now around the city. I know there's one near my house here at Fraser and 24th. That Frey, which attempts to serve food that's local, getting its pork, say, from Fraser Valley or its beef from Pemberton.
It's not the only one. In fact, local food was the biggest trend in restaurants in Canada.
Yeah.
In the last year. People are coming into restaurants. They want to know where the food's coming from. They want to know how it was made or grown and or picked or harvested. They want to know if it's local. They feel better about it because they know they're supporting the local farmer. They know it's probably fresher, and they support. It's part of their local community, and the more of that there is, the better off we all are.
Now, Peter, I've seen a couple of interviews that you've done about this book already. No one's asked you about politics in this current election campaign. Have you not been asked, or are you not talking about it?
ask me a question. What do you want to know?
Well, I'm just wondering what you think of this campaign, and you ran the last time against this current mayor. What's Suzanne Anton going through right now a couple of days before the election?
Well, I'll just talk about the food part of it because the rest of it gets pretty complicated fast. But I think the NPA has overreacted a bit on the whole to what Vision is doing on the urban ag front. And I've stated this publicly, that I think that urban agriculture is coming. It's here. It's going on. It's a great benefit. And to take issue with some of the, you know, maybe frivolous seeming spending on it is fair game, because there has been some over exuberant spending, I think, on some of the grants that were given out. But that said, I think there's a danger that you can bear in doing that, and I think the NPA might be courting this danger. You can throw out the whole urban agriculture thing and say we don't want any part of it, and that would be a big mistake. And the voters, I guess, will decide to the extent that that's an issue in the election when they go to the ballot box.
Have you said publicly who you'll vote for?
No, I'm not talking publicly. I've been asked to endorse a lot of candidates, and I've just said I'm not going to endorse any because I don't want to disappoint anybody or cause any unnecessary wave. I've got my own thoughts, and the only one I'm publicly supporting but not officially endorsing is Sandy Garasino, who's an independent.
Right. For politics for you, is that over?
I'm enjoying not being in politics as an elected official, but I feel like I've still got a bit of a ability to get in the media and have my say about different issues that are important to me, and I'm quite enjoying doing that through writing and commentary and being involved, and I've been involved in some affordable housing initiatives and other things with transportation funding at a volunteer level. So I feel like I can be involved in politics without being elected and without through all the other horrible distractions that are involved in staying elected.
Right. Peter, this is an important book to think about. Congratulations on it, and I hope a lot of people buy it.
Thank you. Well, whatever you can do to let them know about it, I'd much appreciate it.
Indeed, we'll do. The book is called The Urban Food Revolution, Changing the Way We Feed Cities. It's published by New Society. The website is peterladner.ca. Peter Ladner on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunto.